When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Welcome to the ThinkSpace podcast with myself, John Staskowski and Danny Massaro, where we discuss human nature and the practical application of philosophy. To find out more about our cohort course and membership community, please head over to www.thinkspace.academy. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Okay, so a little bit of an unusual introduction to this episode. We're going to be focusing on a book called The Status Game by Will Storr. Unfortunately, it wasn't till after we finished recording that we realised the sound quality on my microphone had some issues with it. I'm not quite sure what they were, but it just sounds really poor in comparison to Danny's microphone. So I have used some software to try and improve it and even it out, but it's still not great. So just bear that in mind as you're listening. Danny just sounds as normal, so there's some really good insight from him in there. Maybe just blind your ears a little bit to my voice when I kick in, as it is, to be honest, a little bit annoying. So we're just going to dive straight into the episode. Danny will be getting into why he thought the book was interesting and why it was useful for a podcast episode. Hope you enjoy it.
Well, the first thing you can do is address me as Dr. Danny Massaro, not just Danny anymore. We know I've got my PhD now, so that's, you know, put me up there, hasn't it?
Look, I'll top trump you already because I haven't banned for years. I've referred to myself as Doc.
Yeah. You beat me. Yeah, I think that someone had directed me to it off the group, our group. You know, it was a podcast. And I'd been meaning to get to underpacking what status was. And because it's something that you know, that game, that sort of one-upmanship, I call it like top trumps. And so, like, you know, like when you're in a group of friends or you're in a group of people, you know, it might be your family, it can be your neighbours, it can be, you know, the gang of you who go running to the running club together, your football fans, things like that. When you think about it, you're always in your way, in your lines of area. It might be, you know, your car or your clothes or your finances or which holiday you've been on. You're always in this kind of weird competition game. You don't want to be at the bottom of the pack. You don't necessarily really want to be at the top, but really top. You know, I'm the best because people don't want you to have too much because, you know, the tall poppy sort of syndrome. If you go around, you want to do it in a way where you're just socially, you know, signaling or, you know, intimating that you've got your stuff together. You're a little bit better, and in many, you know, in many areas, that's. You can do that within a club. Let's say you're in a squash team, you know, where I go, and you're all talking about this little rivalry, who's got the best gear, who's got the latest bag, who knows the latest tour gossip, who talks to the pros, who's had a lesson off who, blah, blah, blah. Now, not everyone will play in that game. They'll just come along because they might be playing in a game at their work, or they might be playing in a game, an academic game or something, you know, someone or... They might be playing in a more of a football game, my team versus your team, you know. But when you're in a squash team like that, say you're all together, as soon as you then go and play other teams, you sort of forget the internal bit status game, and then it's about playing the other team. So the status games are internal, and they're sort of internal into your family, but they're also external. Like once you become a group, then you go and take on other groups, and it's like, can we be the best group? Yeah. So I sort of know that you're involved with these little pecking order games a lot.
We even noticed, didn't we, in our own WhatsApp, the amount of times like we're like just sneak a little top trump
Yeah.
I did it the other day, and I was laughing about it because you flagged it. You sent me something, and I went straight back with something else.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's you, dear. I thought, yeah, I've already seen that. So that's it.
Yeah. Like, you send someone a song or a bit of information, and some people go, oh, thank you, that's brilliant. Some people send you something straight back as if to say, yeah, I've done that. This is even a bit better. Like, You're not better than me for sending me that. I know more about it. And you know what? We all do it, don't we? We all play that. And it was interesting because it's about, when you go into it, it's about rank. It's this feeling of rank and this sort of inbuilt fear that, you know, you have to show that you've got your shit together, basically, and that you're worthy of respect. And for me, I remember, you know, for being involved in competitive sport and traveling around, you know, the world doing that, There's an actual practical and true element to what you're doing. So there's the actual, you know, even me just saying then, traveling around the world, you're signaling that, yes, I'm world traveled. You know, you're dropping these things in all the time, but that's true. But you're also bringing it in. It's in your language. You've sort of said there, yeah, so if you're talking about coaching, like, and you haven't been around the world, I have, you know, and it's so layered into conversation that you don't notice it normally. But then when you actually then go on the tour, say, and you're with the players there, you're back to ground zero or a different kind of game, really, where, right, new game today, get to a new tournament, who's ranked where, so that sort of gives you a bit of a start point. And then that week the game kind of starts. Now you'd think that say it was a, you know, a tennis tournament or something, like, and it's, you go, well, it's clearly obvious that Novak Djokovic is up there, then Nadal, and then Federer and Andy Murray and these people there. They're like, they've got high rank, high status, and so on. But you'll be surprised how even those people, after a couple of defeats or a bad day or a bit of a bad comment in the media or, you know, not playing well at the moment, it's amazing how those high status people fall to pieces and will do anything to get the status back. What I found interesting was, because we play many games, if you're losing in one game, like let's say you're losing in the finances, you're not earning a lot, or let's say you're losing on the tennis court, what you see people do, they'll come in on the virtuous game and they say, well, I might have lost, but I look after children and I'm a nice person, or I have political opinions about this. I think the whole tour should look after itself. So they start going on the moral superiority and the moral high ground. And I've seen that a lot with players who've stopped playing sport because they've not got the rank anymore and the hit of the high status from winning. What starts to happen is they go into other fields and start to try and win those other status games.
That's a good way to segue us into. He does describe three main types of status game that we all play. And everyone will be able to relate to these. I know I did when I was like, oh yeah, that's that. That's when that happened. So he says there's a dominance game, and that's almost animalistic in nature. That's like really just hard-wired, brute force type of thing. Like, who's the biggest in the jungle kind of thing? You know, who's going to eat today? Who isn't going to eat today? Who's going to be the best partner, or the, you know, create the best offspring, all that type of stuff. That's the real, like, that's just about dominating other people in your immediate surrounding. So that's a dominance game. Then there's a virtue game, which is what you just described. People that they're moving into, it's a dominance game. And that's much more around things like ideological purity, like goodness, like morality. That's where you're kind of using virtue. And we see that loads now, don't we? Like, virtue signaling is like a huge, it's all the mean people flaunting.
I'm a vegan, I'm a into the planet, I'm this, I'm. It's like you can't attack it. It's high status, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you're being virtuous, yeah.
I think it's in the book he mentions that he talks about how footballers say, like, a few years ago, it was all like the boing, wasn't it, of flashing your money and your watches and jewelry, flash sports cars, all that stuff. So that's how you kind of signal your status. Whereas now it's all about what's your foundation, what charity work are you doing, how are you getting involved in the local community. And that kind of more in your face stuff's gone, and it's all about virtue now.
Yeah, I'm a great footballer, even though I'm not playing well, just sidestep that, because don't be annoyed at me because I'm earning silly money. I love children, and that's the thing, isn't it? Who can argue with that? So you can't not like the person, can you? You know, the people can frame it as being virtuous, such as we're trying to clean up our country, that they, you know, and we're trying to make our home, our country, a safe place, and we're trying to rid sports arenas of messy parents and naughty this and make it fair. What you're really doing, no one can disagree with that. So you get the status for it, you know, like you're a good person, and that allows you to get away with other things. Definitely see that on Twitter now, don't you, social media?
Yeah, it's that micro level, isn't it? It's like, which flag have you got in your bio, and like, what's the cause of the moment that to show that you're behind and you support? That's all part of that, but achieve little things that you have to tick to be in the core. So that's those two, and the third one was success game. So that's more obvious stuff, especially in sports, of things like talent, achievement, being competent at something. So if you were the best punter in the trial, you'd have like huge status because you were the guy who brought back the most food. And if you were the best warrior in the tribe, and like you protected all the others. And so just that level of being really competent at something, being the best at something, that is like a huge win in the status game. For you and Laura, for example, being the number one in the world.
Yeah.
You can't get more status than that in that sport. It's like, objectively, like you talked about the tennis players earlier, and it's not just in sport, but lots of elements in life, which there's objective rankings, isn't there, where it's like, right, you've got this many points and you are this number in the world. If you're number one, and it's like, well, that's all words that I've not said I'm number one. This is the terrible one, number one. That's like ultimate success game. It's like, no, in touch if that's the ultimate status on that measure.
Yeah. And I think what I found additional to that was that it can be, its status is relative. So you can feel that you're great as, you know, number one even, or having a million or a billion pounds, or going out with the local hero type thing, you know, whatever it is, the biggest house locally. But the trouble is, as soon as you go into another pool, you know, small fish, big pool, as soon as you go into a bigger pond, that relatively you can feel not as good. So you can be earning a lot of money as a football player, and then three more people come in and earn more money. And it's not just the actual money. You're suddenly more dissatisfied with your money, because it's like, I've gone to fourth in the pay scale. And it's like, yeah, but you were more than happy with that money. Yeah, but, and it becomes about who's the top. And you see this played out with rich people, don't you, with the yachts and things, and the top three or four richest people in the world, about going to space now, isn't it? Who's going to be the first one who can take customers to space?
Well, I've got an interesting one with that. He explicitly said, we didn't evolve to create money. Money's like a modern invention. It's a pinprick in the length of time that we've been here. We evolved to create status. Now, people often, we have to look at, say, like, billionaires and think they're just after money, but they're not. They've got more money than they could ever need. They want the status, which money tends to come with, I suppose, at that end.
That's what I mean in sport. I think that's why winners, whether they say winners or they win something big, they want to keep winning. Generally, people, they get addicted to that level of prestige, that level of height. It's not that they're bullies or dominant, like you're, you know, more like you, I remember when you said a dominant leader, a dominant status person and a bully type person, it was more like I thought of Gordon Ramsay and the sort of shouting at people and frightening people, and I'm the boss. And I, you know, it's a bit of narcissism thrown in with it. I'm of high status because I am, and it's fear-based. Whereas most sports people aren't like that, are they? You might get the odd one in MMA or boxing and things, but most sports people are, they're like, you know, kind of what you might say, to get on with their own business, trying to look after their families, trying to be really good at sport, but they can't retire. They keep wanting to win more majors, more success, more money, more. And it's not that they're after. It's the continued level of status and everything it brings to their family and all around. And I've seen that a lot in sports psychology, you know, working with players. It's like, it's very, very difficult for you to be in an area at school or at work or wherever, and you relatively get dropped in how people think of you. And it really links to Heidegger's concept of Das Man, which is the they. As Dasein, as humans, we're so socially linked to other people and other communities. And we think a lot about what the others think about us. What's the narrative I'm putting out into the world? And how is my narrative, my fancy Disneyland story, how is it being perceived all the time by all the significant people around me? You know, how clever do they think I am? Do they think I'm wise? Do they think I'm rich? Do they think I'm attractive? Do they think I've got I'm a good person to be around. You know, I'm a successful, whatever. All different times in history, certain things were probably the big thing to have. If you're at university or you're a professor, it's like, how many papers have I put out? Do all my peers who are also, you know, changing all the time, do they still respect me, or am I a dinosaur in this area? So it's kind of like, you never win it. You can't get to the place where it ends, because what never ends is what they think about me. Or even the thought of, you know, like Marcus Aurelius said, you know, even when you die, you live on forever, because it's like your legacy. What will I be known as? What will they think of me after I'm gone? So we're so much like that. And, you know, it's a great thing, because it drives energy, it drives motivation, it gets you to lose weight, for example, if you've got a wedding coming up, or put muscle on if you're going to the beach. You know, it makes you think, oh, I don't, it makes you want to get revenge if you've lost. All these little things plus more are kind of what drives energy, but it can drive you in a good way, but it can also shame you and take energy away. And in a very simple way, what I deal with when I've worked with athletes or people sometimes when I just talk to them, you can usually tell when they've got their tails up and they're feeling pretty high rank and good about themselves in a few of the games they're playing. The football team might be doing well. They might have had a promotion at work. People might be treating them with respect on the street. You know, they might have just got a new qualification lately and they're feeling up. They've just had some wins. You know, and they've done well. They broke the PB. They've just earned a lot of money. They've done something that temporarily, for the time being, makes them think that other people are looking at me, thinking they're good. Now that can be that can be deep and long lasting and earned, or it can be shallow. It can be, I'm in Dubai. Look how good I am. Look at this picture of this food that I'm eating. I'm up in the world because I eat food like this. Look at me climbing this mountain on my own. At 6 a.m. Look at me. Look at my latest paper. Listen to my latest opinion about the government or about this and that. It's all signaling that I am pretty high rank, relatively feeling good at the moment, and there the output comes. Whereas when you see people of low rank and they're feeling a little bit shunned, or they've lost the confidence, they've been put down a little bit, there's a lot less sort of energy to come out. You know, even physical energy, and strut your stuff in a way and come out with things. You sort of go in your shell for a little while, and it's a bit of a horrible feeling, particularly if you're ever shamed by people, if you're ever picked on, and if you're ever really made to feel stupid. You know, and I think that's a big thing. I think as a coach, a player, manager, a family member or whatever, you know, what a big thing in this book was loads of examples of people who were shamed over something trivial and then ended up killing the person or going to prison, because it was like, you've just shamed me in front of my friends and I have to react. Lots of things about children who've been shamed and put down and picked on and made to feel really low and never put up there in status. They grow up with a real, real revenge streak in them.
Yeah, that was humiliation, and basically nothing worse than just being humiliated in front of your peers.
Yeah.
But, you know, he gives the example that, like, a couple of school tutors and stuff was made, you end up then just going, and it's like, right, ultimate revenge.
Yeah.
Humiliated for too much, man. This is it.
You can't win that game. There's no way I can win that status game. I've been put down so much. And then the anger comes.
Yeah.
You know, and then the revenge. And they won't win on that game. They'll come in on another game. And the other game might be just flat out aggression. One of the stories, wasn't it, was that some kid had been made to feel ugly by his mum or something, and then he went to school and they all laughed at him, and he never got the girls and he never got the money, and he was always unpopular. He tried, started playing computer games, staying on his own, and then, you know, one day he tried with another girl, she rejected him, and that was it. So, you know, a year later, he just shot loads of people. Like, it's a crap world. So he went nihilistic, you know, it's a crap world, but I'll win at this game. So it's interesting, isn't it? It's all very well. It's a fun thing, but it's also quite a serious, deep psychological thing, and why you've got to stop picking on me about Everton.
Well, he mentions in there, like, an African proverb that runs into what you just said. He says, the child not embraced by the village will burn it down to feel its warmth.
Say that again.
The child who is not embraced by the village will burn it down to feel its warmth. And that's it, isn't it? It's like, there's high status consequences of people not feeling that, like, at the start, they have value. If you just feel like you don't have any value, and then on top of that, if they'll humiliate, it's not going to end well. But when you spot a couple of things, sprang onto that, I think I've always had quite an inbuilt like aversion to Stata.
Mm.
Now it's like I'm a bit of a frick, and it's just kind of like that rebel in baseball.
Yeah.
But you know what the likes of when you see people get like saying like, and it's like now you've got to refer to them as Sir Elton John. There's no world where I would ever call Elton John Sir.
Mm.
Or any of the other sports. Like, just because it's a title that's been put on them and it's now you're expected to refer to them in this, like, that automatically ranks you below them.
Yeah.
Like the Royals have always been quite anti-royal and just got more interested in all of that. I don't know why that is, but I feel like even if I'm in a room with someone, I almost feel like the person with the highest status is the one I would ignore them all.
Mm.
And I would just wouldn't show them any attention. I don't know why that is.
The thing is, what we don't like, and this is, depends on cultural, doesn't it? It's always been the case, you know, when they've said, even the people who would, I think one of the stories is a tribe that used to try and grow the biggest yam.
Yeah.
And if you did grow the biggest yam in 2 years, these things would be ridiculous. You'd take them to the presentation, you'd win, but you were not to show off. And I think when you get people who go around entitled and, you know, this is it, there comes a level where you're not going around being dominant about your status. You've been, you have prestige, but you don't throw it in people's faces with titles that have automatically not been earned or given to you. So one of the things that you can do if you are of high status, you know, protect, maybe not a leader. A leader's a bit different, because they recommend if you are a leader, you want to show some sort of zest, because people do emulate and copy leaders. And you do, it's good to have sometimes some heroes that you just think, wow, look at you. I want to be like you. And there's little things they do, pop groups. You might wear the T-shirt when you're younger and you feel great because you're associated with, you know, that you feel like you've got an elevation in rank because you're wearing a certain T-shirt or a clothing, or, you know, some of these things are silly, but they have an effect and they help people. But I think that where people can do well, and this is where the prestigious leader is better than the dominant one in a way, is that they know they've earned high prestige, but they don't rub it in your face. In fact, they invite you to show your moments of prestige. So they will ask you questions. What do you think about this? Now, what do you do? Oh, that's good. Can you help me with this? You know, I don't know what I'm doing.
It can be quite condescending, that, like, I think, well, I've seen that quite a bit. You kind of know that they're not hooked in the role of, like, the give a shit, when you know they don't really give a shit, and they're just kind of...
Intention, isn't it? Like, it's intention. I've always said with my sport, with squash, it's so small in a way, even though it's big in its own pond, very, very big in its own pond, but small on the global sporting map. It was great because you could have this little bit of status when you wanted it, but you were never going to then be perceived as condescending, you know, because, you know, you could meet Roger Federer and he could be just really normal and nice, even though that's the case, but he's going to have to be really on it for you not to be suspicious. Whereas, you know, if when you met Laura or you know, from squat, you're just like, oh, it's just a normal person. Well, it's hard, even with golfers, isn't it? You're always going to be on the back foot going, yeah, look at you now, you know, you've got your jets and all. So you can get an inverted snobbery if you're not careful, because what you're doing is you're almost like not comfortable in your own skin, that you've like, I'm going to beat you on a different status game, which is something around truth or something, you know. I don't fall. I'm so wise, I don't fall for your status. That's another form of game where you go, I'm above the game. Now, I see that a lot. They go, football, we're not even involved, we're not even playing, but it still affects you. And it's like, right, my defense mechanism to my team losing is going so big, so zooming out, that yeah, I might, my football team might lose, but you're talking to the white, one of the top 10 wisest people in England, don't you know?
You still would drive in set.
Yeah,
I've not seen it for years, and it caught maybe 20 minutes last night. And there's a written, it made me think of this stuff straight away. So you've got, obviously, they're all, I mean, as sat there are guys pitching these, they were like full down paper, like games. So it was like a chest set, and they had like what, a Connect 4. And they looked really cool. I just folded flat and it opened up, and it was like, you know, you could take it anywhere and it's dead easy to carry it in. But the really high-end thing of one of the dragons was, apparently she got some kind of background in paper engineering. She kind of knew how much work was involved and how good he was at the craft. Which he's looking at, he cocked his pitch up. He's one of those where he gets dead nervous, forgets everything he said, and he car crashed. But she could see the quality. She said to him, "You're one of the best people in the world at this, aren't you?" And you could see the other dragon like looking at going, "What?" Because he just looked like kind of a normal car. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm probably like, there's three or four of them." And straight away, you could see it went from him having to impress them because he needed their money or he wanted their money. So they were then all desperate for him to pick them as the investor. And his fat self just switched and all that because all the status in the room was sat down. And then he rocks in as this like weird paper engineer. And he's like, "What? Yeah, I'm actually like top three in the world at what I do."
Well, the thing is as well, like that's status again, isn't it? But apart from when you've been granted it for free, like you've been born a royal and therefore I am brilliant, you've been born of low status and you've just been chucked in, so if you're forever known of a low status, you know, gender, race, creed, all different times of history.
He mentions that in the book, back in the day that you had your caste and that was it, you're born into it and you're limited to what status you could have because like, you were born into this and that's your level on your goal.
Yeah, and that's like Ben-Hur, isn't it, and all the old films and things, isn't it, and El Cid and all them films are like, yeah, you can be brilliant up to a point, but you'll never be us because you weren't born us. And that's in the mafia films as well, isn't it? The Sopranos is constantly full of that, isn't it? That, you know, and you see it in The Godfather, but that scene I remember in The Sopranos with status as well, where Tony the boss had to deal with the fact that he was always given automatic status, really, wasn't he? But sometimes it'd waver. So he picked on the youngest guy, didn't he, once, and smacked him in front of his mates to show that he still had strength, even though he was practically having an heart attack. And there was another scene where he was playing poker and they were all telling jokes and laughing at quite decent jokes. And then Tony told a joke that was rubbish and they all really laughed because he looked round it in slow motion. It went into, and he's going like, you know, he's thinking, "You're just laughing at me because I'm the boss and it was a crap joke and this is my life now." So it was like, you don't want, it must be hard sometimes for royals themselves and for people who've just been given high caste. You might say, "Well, it's easy because you're rich and you're this and you're that famous," but you haven't actually earned it. So this is what they were saying a little bit with children. When children are put up as high elevated by the family for no reason, they grow up quite with that entitlement of status. And I just get status because I am who I am. But you've robbed them of the chance to like realize that status is earned and you have to do things that, you know, that so it's, but it's complex, isn't it? Because, you know, there was one of the studies in there was, if you were in a rich area of New York, all your family were really thinking about was the kids being like surviving in the world of richness in a way, in all the universities and all those things, living in great houses, loads of security, you know, and so on. Whereas the parents in the lower areas, they were really getting hard on their kids because they intrinsically knew that they were going to find it hard on the streets. So they had to toughen them up. So you kind of, well, who was the better parent? And the parent that said, "Well, you're automatically always going to be at this status, so just play this game, high status game." Or the parents that were like, "Well, odds are you're always going to be low status around here. People are going to come and pick on you. You've got to learn how to handle it." It's interesting, isn't it? If you were a young kid, if you're a young kid and you come across as too clever and cocky in an area where kids can't beat you on that game, then they're just going to smack you, aren't they? Or nick your ball, or they're just going to put you down. So you've got to be really, I think being streetwise, getting a, you know, an example there to get to this, what status reminds me of is that you have to be quite streetwise about how you use your status and when you're threatening other people with it and when you're coming across as a big shot and too much, too clever, too condescending, always putting people down, always having a top trump wiser answer, always beating somebody too much. The Jordan Peterson thing about play and that the rats that they looked at will let younger rats win occasionally, otherwise they'll just quit the game. So I think to keep people ticking along, and I think as well, like when I've been around friends or people who had tough times, sometimes you can be a hard act to follow because you might be doing well at the time and they might feel a bit inferior to you without knowing it. And you might be like shining a torch on how relatively they're not doing so well. So I think sometimes without being condescending, like you say, it's genuinely getting into the empathy habit of I've had a bit of luck, really, and I have worked hard, but my high status, a lot of it's just me playing a game, and I have done well, but it's all a bit of fabrication in many ways as well, just because I've loads of money, just because I've done qualifications, just because we've won this and that and so on, doesn't mean I'm a better person than this other person. So sometimes I think when you allow people to help you, or you tell people sometimes where you're struggling a little bit or you have struggled without trying to fix them, you can actually help them just by treating them as normal, if you know what I mean. That you need a bit of help, or that, and it's knowing when to take the mickey so you can laugh at each other. And that's what your friends do really well, don't they? If you're getting a bit cocky and you're getting a bit up your own backside, mates, good groups of mates, they'll sort of level you out to an area where they're telling you that you're getting too big for your boots in certain areas. And if you're quite streetwise, you listen, you just tone it down a little bit and like join in a bit.
I think it can, but that broader media cultural aspect was really fascinating for me. So remember we did the Sanctuary of the South episode about that idea of coming up through like consumerism and capitalism and Thatcher and Reagan and all that. And he mentions that in terms of like you went from like the 60s and it been very much like screen orb, everyone looking at it, quite communal, and it's been altruistic almost. And then you get to the 80s, like 20 years later, and it's like Reagan and Thatcher, and it's like, right, there is no such thing as society, everyone for himself, it's all about the individual. And it just switched over, right? And that, he mentions how that just supercharged that status seeking. I would see the 80s, and it's like, you know, the movie Wall Street with Michael Douglas, and greed is good, and all that stuff, that kicked it. We've talked about it quite a few times, haven't we? That just that ethos in the films and stuff in the 80s. So you can see how that just switched it to even on that personal family, like, that must have kicked in even then. So you would have then had mates going on, but he's more lucky, more what cars he on the drive, what's ever driving around with, what was it buying. Back to the domestic desire episode that we did, and then that's leaked into status games, isn't it? Like, what's he wanting? Because if he wants it, I want it.
Well, individualism, status drives individualism and economics, doesn't it? It's like push, get ahead, beat them, climb up over, and in that climb and in that passion to outdo each other, lots of good things are created.
Well, I mentioned that earlier when you're talking about progress, and that is all the key part of it, because this taps into like the very, very worst and the very, very best of humanity.
Yeah.
So you've gone by, without status, or without status gain, there is no progress. If no one's trying to improve and be better than each other and do improve things and be the best at some stuff, doesn't improve. So you've got one end, you've got things like the iPhone, and you've got technical engineers and designers innovating, coming up with new stuff that makes like that. That's still driven by status, but it's positive. But it is also like at the other end, you've got Hitler and Nazi Germany, and that's another big status gain where people are kicking around in 1930 Germany, and they maybe didn't realise how it would end up, but they were all playing status games in a way where it's like you want to be part of the party, and that's got that hierarchy that ranks within it. So everyone's then competing for status within even that, and then you end up seeing like the Holocaust happening and the very, very worst of what human beings do to each other. And he's kind of saying that's all really the same, it's all driven by status, they're all status games at different levels and different way to those things.
Yeah, well, when you think about Putin as well, it's not just power, is it? It's the way it's the way that he's been made to feel by the West. It's like you all genuinely think you know how to live, and your history, culture, traditions, democracy is better than what we do. And in the end, you make people angry, don't you? Because you patronise them and you take too much status, so they can't get you back in other ways. Now, what's the alternative? You know, there's never been a society where there's been no status. You know, communism didn't work. A big section in there, isn't there, about communism and how it failed. You've seen it in cults. I mean, one of the great things I watched that time, which it shows it, and is Wild Wild Country with the Indian, whatever he's called.
Something famous or other.
Ragnish, yeah. And it's brilliant on Netflix to show all this stuff, because he's there in India. He claims he's one of the wisest people ever. Then starts buying Rolls Royces by the dozen, doesn't he? And he has about 100 Rolls Royces. And then he gets people behind him. It's all built on, no, we should all be communal. There is no rank. But I'll just be the one at the top. That'll be it. But the rest of us. But then as time goes on, in all of these cult shows, documentaries you watch, you set up with the ideal of utopian sharedness. No one's an expert in any area. We'll all be good at this, good at that. We'll all be take each other's jobs and try. There'll be no dominance or hierarchy games. Prestige. We won't have prestige. You know, that's going to look down on prestige. Keep your head down. You know, we're all going to keep it flat. And it is impossible to hold it back, because to control it, things, rank starts to emerge, doesn't it? Like favours, and I'm a bit better than you at it, or, you know, I'm the most flexible. You know, everybody knows I'm the best one at this, you know, and you're the worst one at it, because you keep trying to go back to the old way. And it happens in churches, it happens in families, it happens in communities. It's just a force of nature, isn't it? And that's the perhaps linked to Nietzsche's will to power, and maybe, you know, Heidegger's Das Man. What they were getting at was that in a way, don't deny it, join in, but play the game. That's the message in the book, isn't it? Play the game. It's not about winning the game. It's about playing the game and having your ups and downs with it. And that's what I try and talk about. To players and people I help, it's like, not necessarily using this, but it's like you are going to get your ups and downs, and you are going to feel viscerally at times put down and a bit like, oh, you know, like you see it with boxers when they lose and they don't know where to look, and then they sort of come back and then they win another fight and they get redemption. So these sort of ups and downs and in status and drops and the good times and the bad times, they're kind of going on all the time. But I think one thing within families, one thing that came was that it was a bit of a nasty thing was, well, I saw it with someone who said that when someone said, like a parent or something, oh, well, you know, I never wanted you anyway, you know, so the people are doing well, or people have, like where there's been a bit of bitterness. So someone, they've had a breakup or something, and someone's gone on to do really well. I think one of the worst things a parent can ever say is like, well, I never wanted kids in the first place. Well, you wouldn't be here anyway if it weren't for your mum, because I wanted to go and do this. There are what they mentioned, like these ultimate one-liners that take away, like, no matter how well you're doing in the world, no matter how much you've done well and how much money and status and achievement, just remember, you will never get my approval, because I didn't even want that in the first place. Or I never loved you anyway, you know, in relationship breakups, I never even loved you, I just did it for convenience. You know, it's like, I've lost that game and I'm bitter, so I'm going to come in with this comment. And I think so there's some real nasty sides to these status games as well.
The cult that you mentioned earlier, that's one of his conclusions, really, in terms of you have to accept, as a human being, you cannot escape these games. They are always in play, and they're always happening. So it's like a fool's errand to try and, like you said, rise above it, go, I'm too good for that. He gives the example of like Buddhism and mindfulness and stuff, where it's like you get these people who just try and totally detach from any level of status and desire and everything. And then, like, that in itself just becomes like another status game, because again, you just like you said earlier, you're placing yourself, oh, well, I'm not subject to these desires, I'm mindful, I've detached from my ego and all this stuff. So he's like, that in itself becomes a status game. So you can't escape. But one of his solutions that he talks about, you have to basically diversify your status game. So the worst end of it is a cult. That's like the narrowest, tightest, most conformist kind of status game there is, really, where you just go all in on one thing. So it's like, I'm in a cult now, I am just subject to all these rules and things that we all abide by, and you've basically forgotten everything else. And like you said, that inevitably as well will end in some kind of status game. And that's the last thing you want to do, otherwise you end up becoming a Nazi or a communist or with revolutionist female voices, and you're being able to sleep out of it. So it's like, that's bad. So his solution was, you've got to have lots of different levels. You're playing games at different levels and hierarchies across those aspects. So you might have some things where you are involved in dominance games. It might be in your profession, because, you know, you as a coach or as a player or as an academic, you're constantly buying the position as like who's the biggest lion in the jungle. Like, you will have some of them, but you've got to have some virtue game going on as well. So make sure you've had he talks about like getting into volunteering and back up and having charity to take himself away from just being all in as a writer. I heard it on a couple of podcasts talking about how like just how brutal it is as a writer, because it's a constant status game pumping out. And you get told how many people read it, how many people bought your book, is it in the book charts, all this, like had to take myself out of that. So it's volunteering in a working for a charity to give himself a different game to then get involved. So that's a big thing I took away. It's like, don't go all in on one thing. And if your whole like self-satisfaction or whatever is based on one game that you're in, it's like it's just no ending to it. So whether it's Buddhism, whether it's cult, whether it's your football team, and it's like, I have never. Well, and if Everton get beat, that's it. I'm humiliated. So I just want to go.
What do you mean, if?
Not that big Sean Dyche is in the scene. This might be it, though.
Well, you see those people, they run them sort of fans podcast things and live commentaries on games, and there's just, it's distraught if the team loses a goal, even, aren't they? It's
all
like,
in on one foot, it's too much.
I think maybe there's the same wisdom. You're way too much in on the line, your family line of your. You know, you're living for your kids, maybe too much just in your wife. So always get other hobbies, get other places. You know, it's funny, I work with some amateur athletes and they get so absolutely stressed, more than the pros sometimes, at amateur competitions. Nervous, you know, panicking. And you're thinking like, gosh, like, you know, this is just amateur sport. Like, what? You're not pro, you're just a crap amateur. Just embrace the averageness of who you are. But they can't. I've worked it out. I used to say that a lot, but they can't, because what they've got is inside, the feeling. They can't lose rank to the person they're playing on the night or what everyone's saying around them at the club. I've seen people like bouncing out of the club because they got a last minute win in a game of squash and they're just absolutely top of the world for a week, or they win a game of golf, or they get a couple of shots, absolutely distraught if they play a bad round of golf, you know, and they'd like won't come out for 2 days. And I just think, yeah, they've got it somewhere along the line there. They must not be winning in other status games. They must not, you know, they must not have enough diversity going on where they're like, oh my God, I got battered at golf. It was humiliating. I can't believe it. But they're feeling quite good because they've had a good day at work, or they're getting on with the family, or you know what I mean?
I think that's, for me now, I can see what's one game bad. So it's basically all in. So if it's a game of squash, well, it's win or lose. You don't draw a squash. If like you either come off the court, you've lost. Zero. So even like other amateur sports, say you're just like an amateur cyclist and you maybe in like a triathlon club or something, and it's just pure amateur. No one's going to like main world. But even then, you've got like Strava and apps like that. So it's like, oh, that 6 mile length of the road there. Dave from up the road did that in like 20 seconds less, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, now I've got to be doing it. Otherwise, my bike was a disaster. You know, looking at the sky and the air and it's getting the sun and all that. It's now got to be there.
My mate runs a bicycle shop and he's just buzzing. You know, since Bradley Wiggins and Team Sky and all them things, everybody wants to wear Bradley, you know, Team Sky, and their equipment is status, isn't it? I've got 7 grand. See that wheel? It 12 grand. One wheel. And you're like, you what? Yeah, I don't like to talk about it, to be honest, but yeah, 12 grand for a wheel. The other day, it cost me 4 grand to replace. Oh, well, that's the sort of guy I am. It's like when you make it, we've had the serious side, but the funny side of it is one of my mates texting me from like 6:30 from the gym, you know, all right, Danny, I'm just letting you know I'm in gym at 6:30. He's not saying that. He's tweeting, he's texting me pictures of songs, and he's just basically letting me know he's up in the world and he's got the world by the balls. He's listening to music at 6:30 training. And it's signalling, isn't it? It's this. So status symbols that we just all know about that, don't we? You know, which is what you might call signalling. But status symbols, that's another thing of it, isn't it? Like, it's set off, they reckon, you know, with wearing necklaces with the amount, with teeth on them from all the kills you'd had. And as time's gone on, that's gone to your watch and at your Rolex watch. If you've got a Rolex watch, you know, you might for all the world say, yeah, no, I bought this because, you know, it's an investment. It's an investment. That's the type of person I am. I invest. But on the side of that, wherever I go, and it's just there, I'm basically telling everybody there's a level that I'm not below. I can't be. I've got a Rolex. You know, trainers, you know, like trainers, you know, and limited edition, the whole thing about limited edition, but I've got it. Fashion games, you know, computer games, you know, like which is the latest technology you've got. Holidays, where you've been on holidays. You know, the selfie, you know, how many selfies people take is all about they're not going to send you the ones where they're not doing well unless they're playing the humor game or something, you know, and trying to win the humor game, the self-deprecation status game. But less generally, people are saying PR in their lives, aren't they? Look at me and my situations doing well. And it's actually behind the scenes, they're not. They're just running like ducks underwater, flapping, because they're like, what's the next hit? And if relatively somebody gets something better than you, it's, well, look at our life. It's shit. We need to now do that. Dubai's a big one, isn't it? Dubai's just, they've been born out of basically status, hasn't it? If you go to Dubai, it just signals and status symbols everything, doesn't it, at the moment? That's the sort of holiday destination of our time, isn't it, Dubai?
His previous book, which I'd read a few years ago, I didn't realise it was him until I finished it. It was called Selfie, Will Saw. That's, he wrote that, which is all about the advent of mobile phones and, you know, like the sun-facing camera. And it takes it. And it's how it became about, like, self-obsession and posting yourself online and stuff.
Like the blue tick on Twitter, isn't it? That's one that they're going, you know, if you've got a blue tick, you know, if you've... There's all these now symbols, these status symbols were, you know, private reg. We said that the other day, didn't we? That the private registration was one on cars. So I think we all know what we're up to when... And, you know, you might say, well, actually, you know, like the Rolex watch is good quality and it doesn't break and I need a good watch. You know, there's always the practical angle, isn't there, of having the iPhone and having the latest thing and, there's the, you know, and having the bicycle wheel that's $6,000 because it actually functionally could be better. That's all part of it, isn't it, the world we live in, really. But I see it a lot. I see it a lot, like I say, the big one I've seen it in, and it's why I left it. When I was at work, I was in an office, and I suppose the office itself, isn't it, the show, the office was built on that, trying to be high status. The office was David Brent trying to build himself up all the time, wasn't it, more than anything. And when I can leave work and not be in those status games at work, same with the university and places, they're tiring, aren't they? They're just exhausting. Like, was it you, weren't it, who said that, you know, you were nothing at the uni without your bottle of Evian in a meeting when everyone had to have a bottle of water. But there was even status differentials between the brand of water.
Plastic from recycled one that was much.
And then it went on to shame if you had a bottle of water. You had to have a BPA free or something bottle.
If we'd done it, it was like, oh, mine's like bamboo one. That's maybe a good point to conclude in terms of that's zero sum game element to it. That's really the main point I took from it. It's never be hard to feel value in the modern world because it's so big. Everything's on a global level. It's so far removed from the days of like a tribe of maybe 60 people. And yeah. It's just on a totally different level that we've never encountered. In if not the thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. It's never been harder to feel value, but if you think, it's also never been easier. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? So he does mention, for example, what does he call it? It's something like a slot machine, you know, like social media. It's status machine. So you post something on Twitter, and it was out there, then you're sat there going, like, what's it going to get? Is it getting any likes? Is anyone going to retweet it? You could do that and then feel on top of the world because, like, more people are, and just get tumbleweed and no one looks at it, and then you feel even worse. Having posted it, could no one. So even in those microcosm bomb status is all anything, like, which way it's gonna go. And that was what I think I took from it, just that slot machine element of nothing's guaranteed, but you could get in the world if you wanted.
It's visceral, isn't it? You feel it. And I remember, I was going to ask, like, remember when I wrote a book like 2015 and it got liked by, you know, some famous people, and I was just on cloud nine. I was walking around like that, and I was gonna say, you know, it's like, but when it doesn't get liked, or when someone just says it's crap, you know, of someone who you respect and they say it's this and it's this, it's hard. Once you've joined in the game and you get the high, it's hard not to get the low, isn't it? You know, once you feel the world, you win a final, if you lose a final, the differential's too much. And then jealousy comes in and resentment and what's wrong with me. So because status is so relative and it's always moving, it's difficult. For me, I was going to ask you, when's the highest moment of status you've ever felt? Like where you've gone in a room or you've been somewhere and you've just thought, like, in this environment, I'm pretty top dog here, you know.
Maybe it's back to what I said earlier. I think I don't like that either. So I genuinely feel quite uncomfortable if I do feel like I'm being put on a pedestal. People are gone, and it's
I know you were not that way in your nature, but when we played golf and you smacked a shot to the green, you had a little strut about you, you know. So it, you know, you felt high status for that moment. I smacked mine out of bounds, you know, like you relatively was like pretty good. You're not like that, are you? You're not like that, but mainly it was.
I think I've mentioned this before. So if Sir Elton John was in the room, I wouldn't care less. I'm not a couple of decent cheering, but I'm like, I've no interest.
What about Fred again? You love Fred again. What if he came around your house and said, I've been on your podcast, John. I wanted to come and meet you. You're amazing.
Right. Ross was like, teach me how to make some tune. Like, I want that on my finger. I want to make some bad tune. I don't get particularly impressed by me unless they're massive. Right? If they're like the best in the world and they've earned it with pure graph, like meritocracy's time. But I still don't fawn over them. And like, yeah, I don't. I've never been somebody who goes up to a famous person and like, no, I really don't.
Have you never felt high status in yourself?
Yeah, I would say I have. And that, again, I feel a bit most of that's happening. I
naturally recall it, but like,
I remember that. I've thought about this. I've asked you the question. I thought you would nicely ask me back, but I'll ask myself. The highest status I felt was when Laura won the Worlds and I was with her and all that, and I had to carry the trophy back out of the venue, down back into the hotel, and she had to have interviews and went off and all that. And I walked in the reception at the hotel and had the trophy. And it was like, you know, you felt like you'd done it together. Yeah, but this is the point. I'm going, I haven't even played. It's not even me. But that's the most kind of, you get it by proxy, don't you? People hang around with people for status. If you know people, if you're in someone's gang, you're immediately up there, aren't you? That's massive just by being in someone's company and people taking selfies with famous people. It's all about that, isn't it? So when it's actually in your family, you realise, you know, that you're probably making your family feel higher for a while. So it's nice. It's not the worst thing. But I remember like getting you that and then actually just for a week or so being a bit of an idiot, just going around being a bit of a tosser really. Wherever I went, I was so powerful, the feeling. It was like you expected respect wherever you went. If anybody slighted you in anything or didn't do something, you lost your patience. And I remember having a little reflection on that and thinking, shit, like, that was nothing in a way. I mean, it was a big thing for us, but I kind of got a bit cocky or a bit it was just automatic. It was like, well, we've done this, you're down there now a bit. And I lost my temper with a few people and behaved out of character a bit for me. And I thought, God, imagine, like, you know, if you really are famous, you know, when you hear about these pop stars who turn into brats and treat people like shit. I was a bit like, no wonder they do, because they just feel, imagine 100,000 people or whatever cheering your name every chanting and just being elevated so much for no reason. No wonder it gets into your head.
You just reminded me that's when I felt highest status. I told you about this before, I think, privately. I once went and spoke at a conference in Qatar, and they flew me over, like a few different people, it wasn't just me, but they flew us all over, all expenses paid, business class on Qatar Airways. You know, like thousands and thousands of dollars from this city. And you know what business class is like? And I just walked up in my traffic. Like, I could tell people were looking at me thinking, oh, things, hey, is he an athlete or something? What's he doing? Why is he? Like, he obviously does the kind of in the traps, a trip. And it was like, you get to the airport on the other side, you've got all the lounges and stuff. You know what it's like? You're in different lanes, you don't have to queue for everything. You don't go see check-in and all that stuff. Dude, why come this way, sir? Hey, this is after you. Landed in Qatar, and it was like,
I don't know that you go this way.
Trying to lounge again, show up for rocks up, walk, like, started there like this big, time to say they break into the hotel, 5-star hotel. I could see that. It was obviously quite scary because you'd think you can see how people who have this constantly are living on a different plane altogether. It literally is a different world. Even though you're all kicking around together, a different world of status. And I've always felt this, you know, like I said about being respected others. I'll give you an example of a cruise years and years ago. You know, like the staff on a cruise or any like flash hotel type where they're waiting on you and it's like really, really like, you know, intense the service. I've always hated it. When we went went to a really nice hotel. On the beach, like private beach at the hotel, they had a guy whose job was just cleaning the sun bottle. You'd go along the beach and you'd see the, like, people, I'd watch them, and you'd see them just expect to, like, chuck the sunglasses, and they'd just expect to, they don't even sit down, period, or it's just like, and I'm like, no, you're all right, but I'll clean my own sunglasses, you know what I mean? And that level of, like, status over others, I've always hated that as well, where you, because I'm like, I remember speaking to the guy on the, one of the waiters at the, on this crew, and it, you know, classic story of, like, his kids are back in India, he's just sending his money back. He had, like, a, I don't think it was a PhD, but it was sort of, like, high-level subject. And he was, like, genuinely, you just tell him, like, ridiculously intelligent, purely just because of his thrownness, where he was thrown in, then he was on the path he was on. I mean, in the UK, he'd be, like, professor in the university, but he had the same opportunities as that. So I've always said that, where you, it's not false status, but it is in a way where you're put on a pedestal just because of your circumstances. And I am no better than you whatsoever. So I don't, you don't have to wait on me. Don't, like, serve me, like, You just be like, you were on an equal level. Maybe that comes at least
a bit. It's how you've been brought up, a lot of it, isn't it? You see kids being, you have maids in the houses and things like that, and they just, it's just the way it is. It's not, they don't think, they just sort of...
Still seen mates and people I know who've had similar upbringings, and they are. That's the guy cleaning this.
Because if they, I don't know, they have discerned. I've been working.
So there's more to it, isn't there? There's empathy. There's more to it than just status. It's not the whole thing in the world. It doesn't drive every single behaviour. There's lots of other things in there. But it's an interesting one, isn't it, overall?
It's another good book that people, I think, you could probably just listen to him or read a couple of newspaper articles.
You probably don't need the whole book to get the gist.
Like all of these books, they
have them added out, like 100 pages for
some book size. But I think the actual messages in there, they cut to the bone, though, that you recognize it in yourself and other. You start seeing it everywhere then.
Yeah. That's the thing. You're going to play it, know what you're up to, and just curtail it a little bit when you remember to.
When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you. This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.